Some of our landings were desperate adventures. We are now prepared to meet the inevitable counterattacks with power and with confidence.
Let me pass alone. The scarlet rot rides now. Worse than ever. Soon, I won't be more than a mound of flesh. Curse laden. Untouchable. I wouldn't want such a thing to bring you harm.
This is Gary Butterfield.
This is Cole Ross.
And this is a Bonfireside Chat, an undead favorite that'll shag you rotten.
I don't like any of that. I don't.
Yeah, Jarbjorn.
What?
Behave. It was Shaggy Rotten. It was the Austin Powers.
Oh,
and then instead of baby, I said Jarbjorn because he's a baby.
Okay, Shaggy Rotten. I think I interpreted it too literally.
Oh, like you shag them until they rot?
Yeah, I didn't.
That's romantic, not gross. That I will shag you until the end of time. We will be two skeletons fucking in the apocalypse, like that deleted scene from Terminator 2.
I just I don't recognize that as one of his catchphrases. That's not in that's not in the bandolier.
Oh, got you.
Yeah,
I might have made it up. I think he said it says it though. I haven't watched Austin Power in a while.
Oh, it's okay.
It's all right. There are funny jokes in it.
Okay, yes, it looks like that is one of them. So there you go.
Yeah, it's a degree to which someone can be shagged and the degree to which a lake can be nasty.
Yeah, how messed up can a lake be? Is where we get here. And I will say, pretty messed up to an unnatural degree, because we're talking about the Lake of Rot.
Lake of Rot. What did we do last time, Cole?
Last time, Gary, we followed Ronnie through the portal in Rena's Rise, only to find that she had abandoned one doll body for another. Now she's itsy bitsy.
She's just getting smaller and smaller.
Yep. Just making a salad out of a dandelion. And picked her up and went through the outskirts of Noxtella, taking care of an assassin that the Two Fingers sent for her. The baleful shadow. Yeah.
Yeah. Two Fingers sent if she wouldn't play ball.
Yeah.
We killed him. And where we killed the baleful shadow is just outside the entrance to the Lake of Rot.
Yeah.
Which we have to get through. This is right now not particularly relevant to the quest line, but it is the next in the sequence, which we have to do to meet Ronnie at the end of her path.
It is a very strange area, and this is going to kind of be a strange episode as well, because there's not a whole lot of play here, if I'm being honest, in terms of actual points of interest of things that you do, but both the kind of, let's say, cosmology here and also just the development history as well of what this could have been or might have used to be is interesting enough to talk about it here, as opposed to waiting until next year when we do some kind of cut content episode, right?
And we'll probably refresh on that
too, yeah,
because more stuff will probably come up.
True.
As well, this is one of my central From Software conceits is always that these games change a lot in development, and that is the secret thing that's responsible for a lot of connections in the game. And that's a feature, not a bug.
Yeah.
That's okay. We can still come up with our own interpretations, even if they came as a result of this storytelling method that is, in some ways, leave some things to chance, I guess.
Yeah. That shuffling around results in new connections, but also where those ties are severed from the initial plan creates a lot of the elliptical nature of the way information is revealed in these as well. Just because there is a non sequitur. We're walking into Rot Town and we should be in Voidburg.
Yeah. It's a super non sequitur.
Yeah.
And that's okay.
Yep.
There's a tension that some folk will have in squaring circles.
Yes.
And it's just a tension I don't have. Yeah. We talked about that before.
Yeah.
I think this is really interesting from a gameplay perspective as well. Like, yeah. there may not be many specific gameplay incidents,
mm-hmm.
but the idea of, you know, the narrative before I played Elden Ring was always like, oh, Miyazaki put 1,000 poison swamps in there. Here's an interview where he says he likes them. And there really weren't that many poison swamps.
Yeah.
You know, like I was expecting there to be a lot of them, but some of them are like poison puddles. This is the real one. And I think it's really interesting that it stands in contrast with the other ones that you can really easily obviate.
Yeah.
By making one in an indoor space where, you know, you don't get enough bars on your 3G horse to summon them down here. I think that makes this like an interesting, example and a thing they haven't done before. They haven't done a toxic swamp or a plague swamp.
I mean,
like there are aspects of Demon Souls where there's like a plague little zone down at the bottom of the boss arena.
Yeah.
But they've never had like a plague, like a serious fucking poison swamp that you have to navigate like this.
Yeah. That, that does require you to think about your resources and it, like even the way status effects work, you know, like mm-hmm. by the end of this, you're going to be just okay being scarlet rotted.
Which is anathema to like how you play the game and how you played every other From game.
Yeah.
Like I have a lot of affection for this game as a gameplay challenge, which I think a lot of people probably don't like it because it's a big poison swamp and they do not give you enough tools unless you're an incantation caster to consistently not have scarlet rot.
Yeah.
For me, this whole thing, like the entire lake presents another gameplay mode the same way that stealing the key from the sleeping dragon or doing one of the heists.
Mm-hmm.
Like this feels like a tabletop problem to me. How do I navigate this and get the things from it and mm-hmm. get to the other end and explore it with these little shuttle runs? It's very similar to clearing graphite off the third roof in Chernobyl.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You know, like you end up doing these little runs where it's like, you know, save your breath. You'll need it for what comes next, you know, of like resting on these little spots.
Yeah. But planning what you're going to do, like, okay, is the outer rim safe? No, not here. But if I get a couple more down. Yeah.
Am I going to die on this run? You know, and is that, can I make it back here?
Yeah.
With a more efficient way to grab my souls. Is it worth going and banking as much stuff as I can and treating this as a suicide run mm-hmm. zone?
Yeah.
How can I use Estus literally just to like forestall, like as just an extension of my life bar?
Yeah.
What does this navigation problem look like if my life bar is effectively 10 times as long?
Mm-hmm. I mean, you know? It's also a place where like it makes zero sense to have any blue Estus, to have any of the cerulean tears. You know, it's like, I'm not really going to be casting a bunch here. Like nothing is especially like difficult to deal with up close as long as you know how to manage, you know, death blight and stuff. But it's like, no, I really, really need healing as well, because I'm going to be constantly trying to catch up from behind. Because again, like we're walking up on this rainstorm and saying, oh, I'm not going to get through that without getting wet. Like you are in the lake of rot. Rot is going to happen. Just be okay with it.
Rather not use a hand on the umbrella.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to give up half my hands for that.
Mm-hmm.
So like, I really like it. I have read people who hate it.
Yeah.
Online, but it works for me as a gameplay consideration.
Yeah.
In terms of how it fits in, it's interesting, but nonsensible to me mm-hmm. in a way that doesn't, you know, I don't care about it. It's not good behavior, but I don't care about it.
I also love it aesthetically.
So
cool. I mean, we've seen it before. Like there's a little overlook on the Ansel River well, and you don't get a title card on this, so you don't know what that big pink space you can't really access is. But like mm-hmm. you know, things were a little bit foggy and pink and fungusy up where we fought the Baleful Shadow, and but then you get that, then you get down and you're in the real pink area. The way that I didn't mean for that to sound as lascivious as it is, or as it sounded. Like this is apocalyptic. This is apocalyptic in a different way than Caelid is. Like nothing, a natural rotten swamp would not look like this. It would not.
No.
It would not appear to be a Kool-Aid biome.
It looks like an alien landscape.
Yeah.
And even that title card popping up is a great moment. Like you take the elevator down after the Baleful Shadow, and you have been trained this entire game to fear rot
mm-hmm.
and treat it as a serious obstacle. And here's a whole fucking lake of it. Like to me, it's a title card with impact similar to The Gutter.
Yeah.
Like it's not as funny, but it's just kind of like, welcome to hell.
Yeah.
In like an affectionate way.
God, I love that. I love that moment when you just texted me saying, hey, I found the Blight Town and you're not going to believe what it's called.
Yeah, it's a really good joke. Yeah. Dark Souls 2 is great.
Oh my God.
So yeah, so you get here and the concept is, it is what it is. It's a huge lake. There are little bits of fungus and some like kind of brick outcropping structures growing out, but everything else is this lake. If you stand in it, you quickly accumulate Scarlet Rod.
Yeah. The lake itself has this bright fog rolling on it. Like, we're underground. There's no way that, like, light should
not
be.
Atmosphere.
Yeah, there's no, yeah. Like, there's no light. There's no sun here, but this is an incredibly bright area. The water itself is disgusting, too, if you get a good look at it. It is, you know, not just, the pink soup, but there are darker chunks just kind of floating in it. And also, I love this detail.
Those are carrots. Carrots and parsnips. Don't be afraid. It's a stone stoop situation.
That's what I had. Yeah.
I brought the rot.
God damn it. Why do we invite him? Blind swordsman, stop it. The surface is iridescent with oil. So a whole bunch of stuff has died in here and its fat is just kind of rolling around on the top.
Greasy.
Oh, yeah. So it's good.
Great. Like an old soup. So it, as we mentioned before, it fits in a weird way in the world.
Yeah.
You have a note here, a comparison, the note that, of Ash Lake, like it does end up feeling like a little bit of an earlier design. I think Ash Lake squared the circle.
Yeah.
With like having that be the base of the tree, and it making sense here. This feels less sensible to me.
Yeah.
What this is. Like, it's infested with rot, which is something we strongly associate with another area. Rot is not something that's strongly associated with Ronnie.
Yeah.
This is not below Caelid, which is the rot zone. This is beneath Liurnia.
Yeah.
And the surface is fine. It's thriving. this stuff is good for Liurnia. Liurnia is one of the, there's growth and stuff. Like, it's not doing perfect, but it's not rotten. It's not, plants grow there.
They're dealing with their own extraterrestrial kind of fauna flora yeah. problem with the crystals and the glintstone, and also geographically the entire place is sinking in. It's like when the Simpsons needed the foundation repair, right? And Bart just rolled out the,
it would make tons of sense for that to be a consequence of this. It sinks into the lake of rot.
Yeah,
but those areas have nothing to do with each other.
No,
like, and there's no sinking into a lake of rot should look different than just sinking into the earth.
And something I like about this being separate from Caelid is it really underlines how messed up what happened to Caelid is. Because that, like, it's tied to a different thing. It was a bloom. Like millennia, fired off her little nuke there. And it destroyed it. Here, something else has happened. There's an imperfect seal. We're going to talk about this, but where whatever god or whatever toeholder representative of this has been sealed away. But like, there can be two different places that are overtaken by rot, and they don't have to be related. They can kind of be coincident next to each other. And I think that also kind of plays along with like these forces that the lands between are under the sway of are not mutually exclusive to each other. We see them next to each other all the time. We see them, working together, or even the forces around them utilizing them, against each other. Yeah.
Which like underlies the big cosmic chess game pawn.
Yeah.
Part of this, the really dumb metaphor that popped into my head is that, this is a router. And whenever Melania blooms, she creates little Wi-Fi hotspots.
I gotcha.
Yeah. Like she just, that's what happens if you fight her enough. She creates a Wi-Fi hotspot of Scarlet Rot. Yeah.
Just
Wi-Fi
where,
hot rot.
Yeah. Just wherever she goes, she's got one of those Wi-Fi backpacks. Yeah.
Yeah. So the lore, we talked about this a little bit because we've talked about the Blue Dancer charm.
Yes.
This was found in the High Road Cave fighting a golem. This is kind of behind Stormhill. it's a underground biome that does not feel directly connected to this area to me, other than being underground.
Yeah.
But even then, it's a different kind of underground. It's a dungeon cave underground, not like the second world underground.
Yeah.
You know, hollow earth underground.
It was a bit of a preview of like some of the assets, like that. It feels like that it could have connected somewhere to some of these, you know, underground cities at some point.
Yeah.
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 But this is where, you know, so that charm, you know, the Blue Dancer charm, it talks about, you know, the dancer in blue represents a fairy who in legend bestowed a flaming sword upon a blind swordsman. Blade in hand, the swordsman sealed away an ancient god, a god that was rot itself. And the map fragment for this area, you know, just underlines like, yeah, the essence of an outer god is sealed away here somewhere, be it behind the cloister or beneath this place. We don't actually see the site where this is. And I just love that it's just buried and we don't know where, but it is still ambiently like seeping out, you know, like they sealed some radioactive material improperly in a cave, you know.
But yeah, like, it feels exactly like that. Yeah. Like, or you seal soft serve in a soft serve machine, but it still leaks out the nozzle. You know, like it's, you know, the nozzle is still going to feel a little like soft servey.
Yeah.
You know, from this, I think it's the cloister.
Yeah,
like is what where I think it's at, because otherwise, like. There's a lot of people worshiping it.
Yeah,
like,
they're pointed directly toward that. I don't think
that throws us into the like, what do we do with cut content though as well? Since those enemies were not originally supposed to be there, but like to me, that is the thing that makes the most sense with the game as it is presented.
It's as published versus as kind of designed. I'm fine with it. Squares away as designed, right?
Yes.
Just because these spaces, it happens in the Lands Between all the time. Spaces are, you know, invaded, vacated, people hermit crab into them, they're repurposed. That's just the way it goes.
Yes. This blind swordsman is the one who taught Melania how to fight. Even though she was a kind of a toehold for this outer god that, you know, he sought to seal away.
Yeah.
You know, taught her how to fight, probably some of the discipline that she uses to seal this away as well.
Yeah.
Given that was his, you know, kind of a area of expertise.
Yeah. I was kind of like, okay, I'm going to teach you everything that I know so that maybe you can fight in such a way that you do not need to call on this. If my mission as this blind swordsman, who, you know, according to, you know, tale, has been contacted by a higher power to stop the rot, then that is the best way, is for me to get in good with the person who is the next most likely vector for this force.
Yeah. Teach you how not to use it.
Yeah.
The architecture, once we get further in here, like this kind of cloister we're going to go to, looks a little like the old and old palaces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, has a giant statue of bearded men, you know, giant statues of a bearded man throughout there and stuff. Very hard to supposition about, again, given that where this is at.
Yes.
Because I, as far as I know, I never put a connection together with the old or Ul and Rot.
Not with Rot. To me, the connection between Old and Ul and the ancestral followers is strange. You know, like it feels tenuous. Like, yeah, they show up in a bunch of the same places, but given their level of technology and kind of how nomadic they seem, it seems weird for them to have built big stone palaces and stuff.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah. So I don't know if they're hermit crabbed into whatever worship these things either. There's literally no mention of Old or Ul in the text dump outside of the, you know, title cards and stuff.
Yeah, and what we have in the game ends up making a kind of sense. If you know, and this is the best we can do, it's not super satisfying, but it fits in the themes fine. The Olds built this palace here. You know, we don't know if that's the ancestral followers. Someone did it. The ancestral followers, you know, came in. The god was sealed in that palace. Is that part of the mission of the Old? Was the blind swordsman a member of that culture? We do not know. The presence of this god tainted the lake. And then everyone took off because the lake sucks. And then the pest rolled in. Also, there's a sky beetle kind of thing that lives here because this is where he rolled down to.
Unrelated.
Because it was cheap. Yeah. He moved here the same reason why people moved to Vancouver, Washington. It's like, the rent is cheap.
It's for tax reasons, you know?
Yes. It's a rotten tax shelter, baby.
Yeah.
Let's talk about a little bit of that cut content. Yeah. Where we're getting this stuff from.
Yeah, yeah. So I learned about this from Zully the Witch. Like I learned about mm-hmm. so much of this stuff. She did a video, kind of talking about the 1.0 version of the game and kind of doing some scraping, right? So yeah. As presented, here, there is one enemy that really sticks out. There is an ancestral follower that is just kind of wandering around. In the current version of the game. In the original version, in 1.0, before the day one patch, this place was not full of the pests, the kindred of rot. It was full of a different version of the ancestral followers, special kind of rot infected versions of them. They actually look pretty nasty. But they are worshiping at the cloister, which we're going to get to, by doing their big foot stomp thing that we've seen them doing worshipfully in other places.
Yeah. And this ties in with the load list for this area having a bunch of the ancestral spirits and like the little animals, little ghost animals and stuff.
Yeah, specifically
this is going to have
specifically the Estelle arena. When we get down there, yes. that big chamber, which you can tell would look like the ancestral spirit chamber if it didn't have the night yep. sky stuff applied to it. Like that was going to be an ancestral spirit fight. You know, like one of the regal ones with its little buddies, right? So yeah. they changed that. So as it was originally planned, we would have these ancestral followers here still worshiping their spirit through the rot, right?
And it would make a lot of sense for that arc lit, because as is now, you fight an ancestral spirit, mm-hmm. you fight the followers, then you fight a spirit. Then you go to another area where there are just more followers and you just fight another one.
Yeah.
It's a little bit unsatisfying. Mm-hmm. If you have them in, Pokemon Red, Pokemon Blue versions, like you fight the ancestral spirits, they're kind of noble. It's sad. Then you fight the corrupted version of it.
Yeah.
Which are these rotten guys and then a rotten version of the ancestral follower, which I can only assume would have different moves or at least would provide the rotten status effect.
Maybe.
Due to proximity. That would at least provide a contrast.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to the weirdness of there just being like a stag you have to go kill to get its remembrance.
Right. That is not really connected, is not necessary for anything aside from getting that, getting those runes or getting that remembrance. As for Estelle, if that ancestral spirit was not going to be in, off of the Lake of Rot, then Estelle would not be here. And Estelle has an unused animation. Which you can call up if you have the tools that those very smart people have, that actually mm-hmm. shows Estelle.
It drops down and does 10 pushups.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah. It has it falling from. I don't know. That could be pushups. I don't understand its body. I'm not going to make assumptions. But it's the Estelle kind of crashing from the sky. This big bug made of orbs crashing.
Like Radon,
yeah,
kind of,
yeah. And then there's some speculation, like on the Fexture Life Wiki, there's speculation saying like, oh, maybe this would have crashed to the ground after the first phase of Radon's fight. Like his concentration wavered, and then boom, this thing he was trying to stop from coming here drops down. Yeah. Got no idea. All we can say is makes no sense for this thing to be dropping from the sky if it was always meant to be fought within a cavern where one might, I've asked a geologist, caverns got no sky normally.
Yeah. Yeah. This one specifically has no sky.
Right.
It has a big trippy sky, but it doesn't have like a big hole where you can see the rest of the world.
Right.
So it's a little goofy, mm-hmm. The end result ends up being similar, right? Either the ancestral followers are down here and got tainted by rot, and then the blind swordsman sealed rot down here,
mm-hmm.
and the ancestral followers left. Here we have the same thing, but they all left, or they almost all left except for one.
Yeah, yeah.
It ends up being very similar, but also neither of which is super satisfying to me.
Yeah.
Personally.
What matters is that this force was sealed here and it is effectively useless. This is not a place of honor. Like one great deed is commemorated here. But seals are not meant to last forever. Right.
Yes. Yeah. The 100-year containment, new containment sarcophagus is failing.
Yeah. I'd be curious with, you know, geometry examination tools. I have no idea where the state of that particular art is just yet. But I'd be curious to see what lies beyond the grand cloister there, because as it stands, it just kind of dead ends. You know, like mm-hmm. if there was a place where there would be like the big stag remains there, you know, like what could that have possibly connected to? Right.
Yeah. I could also, I mean, they'd probably, the stag remains is an asset.
Yeah.
You know, I could also just see them shunt that out to you.
Yeah.
Like just not loading it in. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I know that it's kind of scuttlebutt in the periphery. Like I have not seen a lot of deleted space. You know, kind of illusory wall style Dark Souls 2 gutter things mm-hmm. where they go into unused zones. I do think I read somewhere, and I apologize for not being able to source this, but that the geometry kind of programming architecture for Elden Ring is easier to use than previous ones, which means that when modders get a hold of this, new areas will be an easier to do thing.
Oh man.
Or expanded areas, which is always the most exciting part of any of the mods that I've played.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Where I'm like, oh shit, I haven't been able to go in here before. That's really fun.
Nightfall so, coming soon. Yeah.
looking forward to that. Even that Dark Souls 2 mod that was not super great.
Yeah.
That had a couple like it's just exciting to see a new mm-hmm. space.
Augur of Darkness. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So looking forward to that.
Mm-hmm.
Generally, this first big room is hard to talk about other than the very specific interest points.
Mm-hmm.
It is mostly about what we talked about earlier, which is planning your trips, your excursions, basically.
Yeah.
There is an item that you can use. There's a preserving bolus that you can use to actually get rid of scarlet rot. It's kind of rare.
Yeah.
You can craft it, but then the materials for it are kind of rare.
No.
For some folk who play, that's not going to be a concern because they will grind or farm the materials. I'm not going to do that personally in a Souls game.
The limiting factor was the crystal cave moss, which you just have to go run like a particular cave in the south of Liurnia to get a hold of that.
But what am I doing with my life if I'm doing that? Like if I'm resting to allow a moss to respawn, which I then go in and scrape off rocks.
Yeah,
in a video game.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, like a video game.
I've got moss that needs scraped off of rocks at home.
Yeah, I want to use the moss scrape simulator. Yeah, I'm not about to do that.
Yeah,
So my perspective and what I think makes for a more exciting mm-hmm. play is just a power through.
Yeah, yeah. So it's like, okay, with the way that buildup works, you know, the meter fills up very quickly. And if you manage to get to, say, you know, safe ground, you can just kind of stand there and wait for the rot meter to kind of dwindle. Right.
Yeah.
Once it procs, once the rot starts kicking in and your health starts dropping, then it becomes a question of, okay, do I use one of these incredibly rare items to, you know, take this off, knowing that I very quickly am going to get this build up, you know, back on again? Or do we enter a new phase of this where I'm not even worrying about my build up meter and this is all about the health bar, baby? Yeah, I'm on the clock.
Yeah. Yep. All of a sudden I have a time limit, which is the way I prefer to mm-hmm. do it. When I first went here, I spent a lot of time waiting for my rot meter
mm-hmm.
to go down. And then I decided, fuck that. Cause I don't really like that as a, you know, it's mm-hmm. not fun, for me to do. So I decided to YOLO it mm-hmm. and had a lot more fun.
Yeah,
in this area. And it's not just, this management, cause you're not, the cool thing about this area is you're in just the right amount of danger,
mm-hmm.
From things other than rot. Like if there was only rot, it wouldn't really be a big thing. You would just beeline to the end of it. Or beeline to points of interest and just heal through and nothing would happen.
Yeah.
But you get to these safe spots. You get to these little platforms where you can hit a device and will cause other platforms to raise from the ground. And basilisks tend to be around these or on these.
Yeah.
Or triggered by them. So basilisks in this game, not actually a very difficult enemy,
mm-hmm.
huge panic inducers.
Yeah.
In a very small area where getting out of the cloud could mean getting into another status effect
mm-hmm.
that you're maybe trying to avoid.
Yeah. That is such a smart combination. I love that because basilisks are, you know, yes, it's crowd management, but their whole thing is area denial. What happens yep. when you deploy them and suddenly the area they're denying by belching out their gas is the one safe area that you were counting on, right?
Yep.
So it's either take the instant death by sticking to your ground, or go and play around in the rot. It's a big storm. You're not going to get out dry.
Yep. I love it as an encounter design kind of thing. The other points of interest you're going to find, other than just some kind of random, some like random consumable items and shit. Yeah. There are kind of capital I items and such, one of which is a mini boss. Up near the cloister, there are platforms you can go up on, and an alabaster lord teleports in at this point. We fought these guys a bunch. The big kind of complicating factor here is you have a smaller area of effect.
Yeah.
Or an area of maneuvering.
Yeah.
Around him. And if you fall. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big problem.
Yeah.
And that particular area is tough to get around to, because like you're running from pillar to pillar. There's not really like anything in between them, so getting back up, it'd be a real big hassle. I have no idea if this thing even like despawns when you fall. It's not a field boss. This is like a mini boss, just a real tough enemy who spawns in.
Yeah. The reason why you might want to fight him here is you get a weapon for him, a unique weapon, his sword, the sword of the Alabaster Lords. This is where, when we were talking about them last time, this is where it tells you that they have risen to life when a meteor has fallen, when a meteor struck.
The weapon art on this is pretty cool. Sorry, the weapon skill, because it lets you do their little move where it creates like a little tractor beam. Like just it will pull enemies closer to you when you activate it.
I also think this is one of the ones that got boosted, buffed in the last patch, because it was a weapon skill that no one was using. The southeast of this has some ruins where there's a really important item for people who are putting together like optimized or one shot builds, which is the Mushroom Crown. Not only does it look horrible and itchy, but it confers rot resistance, and it raises your damage if something nearby you is rotting. So those insane one-shot builds you see on YouTube, this is part of the order of operations for it, is to give yourself rot and then put on this crown to get the buff.
This is one of those that is like the Xanthus crown, where it is impossible to see around it, kind of deal. But I like how like this is not part of a set, it is just a better hat for the fungal set that you might have found up in Caelid. South.
I was gonna say, and this is where we get just a little bit like, long ago great lords served the Scarlet Rot, which we know that right now it's got all kinds of little tiny bug creatures that serve it, but the idea that there was an aristocracy, or there were people of status who served and worshiped the Scarlet Rot, is interesting. There's not a lot of information about that kind of aspect.
And they were, their favor was demonstrated visibly by the fungal growths that were on there. You know, it's kind of like, there's some religions where just like as a show of piety, like, oh, this person doesn't bathe, right? Humility, right?
Yeah. It's like the hat I wear made out of communion wafers. almost exactly.
I'm telling you, man, you would have so many less pigeon problems if you stopped wearing that.
Hey, I'd also have fewer pigeon solutions. it depends on how you look at it.
Oh my gosh.
I'm killing it with metaphors today, man. Communion wafer hat, exactly like this.
Yep.
Wi-Fi rot spot, exactly what Melania does. What?
Yeah. Oh man. If you head north from here, sorry, I got this mixed up. This whole area is a little confusing. If you head north from there, there's a pressure plate that will raise up a kind of a circular field of platforms around just a big pile of nothing that when you get close, reveals itself to actually be one of the the Dragonkin soldiers that we fought. I have so much trouble with this one here.
This is hard. This is a hard one. It's a really interesting kind of illustration of how like they can reuse bosses, and some of them can be a big problem and some of them cannot, right? Like I typically have not really struggled with Dragonkin soldiers in this game, but I still find this one tough.
Yeah. They're so effective at mid range is the thing. And if you are adhering to any being on the clock against something that can hit you hard like this, with your HP coming down, like you're kind of putting yourself in one shot territory, which kind of sucks. So if you're playing it safe and sticking to the ring of platforms, and kind of letting your spirit summon fight if you're using those. You know, you still don't have a lot of room to dodge around this.
Yeah. He drops the dragon scale blade, which is a katana that does ice lightning, made with scales that were thought to confer immortality to the ancient dragons.
Yeah.
A little FromSoft motif.
Yeah. All the way from the Kingsfield days.
Yeah. Yeah. The eastern portion of the lake has that's where the ancestral worshiper is wandering around carrying his immunizing horn plus one.
I love that. I love it.
Not gonna be good enough, but it's very funny that he's wandering around with that thing.
That's so good that he's just wandering around like, oh yeah, no, that's fine. Why is everybody so upset?
Yeah. I got my bread basket on. I love it. It's very funny.
Yeah.
And then the southwestern portion is where you can get the Nomadic Warrior's Cookbook, which is what teaches you how to make rot damaging consumables, mm-hmm. which are very useful for bosses that are vulnerable to rot.
Yeah. You can get the horribly named Rot Grease.
Yeah. Yeah. good to have.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Your main thing, and you can even see this from the north side of the lake where you're going to be headed to, is this grand cloister that is far across there. This is where your main platforms are going to take you here. And you can kind of see the lake itself kind of forms this waterfall that goes down into it. And I'm just begging them to don't agitate the rot water. Because that's going to aerosolize it, and you got a lot more problems now.
No one to breathe it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Instead of taking a coffin down this, you drop down a series of ledges.
Yeah.
To reach down, do a little platforming challenge to get down to the bottom, which is crawling with these kindred of rot.
Yeah.
These pest enemies.
Big centipede shrimp guys. This also is very tough for me. Because there are so many of them that have eyes on you when you're coming down here, and then they're firing from enough directions that the don't get psyched out, just block with a shield tactic didn't necessarily work that well for me. So it's just kind of panicking, trying to figure out which way I need to dodge or which way I need to block, and then dying and needing to come back down. Thankfully there is a grace right at the top of this though.
Yeah. And thankfully, so you don't have to do the lake again.
Yeah.
I think I probably would have had a similar experience if I wasn't. Both of my full playthroughs of this have been had a ranged option.
Oh, yeah.
So I just sniped these guys from a distance. That's how I play all these games. I try to like scout. And some of the sight lines are a little bit obscured.
Yeah.
For them. But once you get down on the floor, it's pretty wide open.
Yeah.
And if they haven't seen you, you can usually headshot them.
Yeah, and they're not very durable either, so
if you head at the base of the waterfall, there is two, for my money, the hardest version of the putrid ulcerated tree spirit.
Yeah, fuck this, I don't care.
I know that this boss has defenders. They've come out in the Patreon. I respect you and love you, but fuck this.
Here now
Well, so there's another one at the base of the Halig tree that you fight that's also in a rot lake. And that one I don't find nearly as annoying. Later you can fight two of them at the same time. I don't find that as annoying. This is so fucking rough on me and irritating.
Yeah.
I think part of it is just the mental overhead for getting over here.
Yeah.
Of like carefully managing my health and stuff. But by the time I get here, I do not have the patience to deal with another one of these fuckers.
Yeah.
And I hate that it's here and I hate that they're in the game. Yeah. Just fuck them.
I would take this away from anybody who likes it. I would take it away from you.
If I did, Elden Ring Randomizer ever comes out and it's really great, this is the thing I'm going to take off of it.
Yeah.
Similar to the Chained Prisoner.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I do not need to be running into these things randomly in the field.
God, that Chained Prisoner. Oh, God.
That guy fucking sucks.
It was just so funny when everyone would show up. How God just damn you guys would get.
Dark Souls Randomizer, once that's ready, I'm gonna end up buying Elden Ring again on like a Christmas sale for when they eventually do release a randomizer for it, because that's so fucking fun.
Same. Yeah.
God, I love randomizers. But yeah, this guy sucks. Instead, you should go the other way, where there are a bunch of pests worshiping. I really like that they subbed out the ancestral spirits with these guys. It's like two of the enemies that have a very explicit worship animation.
Yeah.
they're not the only ones, but like in terms of like a choir, like in terms of a clergy, this is another enemy type that fits really well into the slot.
And it's very unnerving to me. I don't know if I'm just suddenly, you know, I'm just, I don't know, grading this on too much of a curve, but seeing them just standing there, you know, standing still facing in this direction with their many hands up like that, it trips the that shouldn't be kind of thing. And maybe because there are too many legs involved.
It's a weird thing that bugs do.
Yeah.
Like everyone's one of the things that something that people always are like, oh, moths are so cute. Moths are scary, actually.
Yeah.
Fools. And the thing that makes them scary is how their wings just kind of breathe.
Mm-hmm.
Like, have you ever seen two moths in the same place where they're kind of breathing in unison with their wings?
Yeah. It's
like just slowly moving their wings. It makes me feel like I don't belong on Earth. Like, it's like, oh, I shouldn't be here.
Yeah.
This is like the underground. This is like underwater.
Yeah.
This isn't for me.
Anywhere that a moth is a sign that I do not belong here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I understand admiring their wings. Some of them are very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
They creep me out and they're covered with like powder that I'm pretty sure that if I breathe, I would die.
But also,
I don't know if that's true, but I don't want to.
But also, if you touch the wings and get any of the powder off of it, they will die.
It's a real standoff we have going on, me and moths. Like, we both have our fingers on the button. You know, it's like it's a prisoner's dilemma. But it's a really great scene, and there are more of them than are typical. Like, it's a huge density of these things. From a gameplay perspective, if you were to just go in here and rumble, I could see that being fun. It's fun to treat this like a Metal Gear 5 base and dismantle it, you know, one by one. It's really fun to throw fucking Haima's explosion, not the gavel, but the other one.
The mortar? Yeah.
Yeah, the mortar, and just blow up like half of them in one gigantic explosion. I really like having this many squishy enemies right next to each other.
Yeah. I my approach to this is always to treat it a little bit like that, one big stairway in, 1-3 of Demon Souls.
Oh yeah.
You know, headed up to the penetrator there. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense.
Just try not to aggro too many of them, but peel enough off, at once.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The building that they're worshiping, has the interior covered with those little cup fungus things, and there's a large statue at the end that is completely overtaken with the cup funguses. This is where I presume in game as published the God of Rot is. It would make sense to
somewhere behind here. I never paid a lot of attention to this because I don't use daggers, so I never just read this and considered the implications. Inside of here, next to the statue, there is a chest that contains the Scorpion Stinger dagger. And I figured, okay, a Scorpion Stinger, that's just a name. No, that's literal. This is the tip of a great scorpion's tail, glistening with scarlet rot. And I love the implication of the of the description: a ceremonial tool used by heretics, crafted from the relic of a sealed outer god. A relic, a piece of the body. The rot's a big bug. It's got bug aspect to it.
Yeah, it's got to be a big scorpion.
Yeah,
you know, because otherwise it's really silly. They took a scorpion tail and dipped in a different kind of poison. It's a little too stupid.
I've got my scorpion here. I replaced the end of its tail with a pistol. It's a 9mm.
It's old world blues. For Fallout New Vegas. I like that we don't see the God of the Scarlet Rot, because knowing it's a scorpion or has scorpion bits, I know that FromSoft can make a cool scorpion. That is much more pedestrian than the like Azathoth like presence I'm imagining.
Yes. I'm picturing almost like a big tangle of like scorpion tails, I'm seeing it like tumorous, you know, just an amalgamation of chitin and fungus, not discernible by looking at it. Yeah.
Yeah. I would love to see, concept art of what they did with that, but it's a weird thing where giving it a shape, like this, like giving it some definition, makes it a little bit less spooky to me.
Yeah.
Personally,
I just like that we get one small part of it because it's from a tail, but it's probably not from its tail or the one tail. There could just be incidental
tails. Or even a tail. This could be a fingertip.
Yeah.
You know, this is a dead end. Weirdly enough, You cannot go further in this. Naturally, we have to take another coffin to climb down in and take down. Slightly more congruous than a teleporter.
Yes. Yeah. But, yeah. Or a coffin that goes up a waterfall. This one just goes over the waterfall. You take a wacky little ride down to this big chamber that is far to the south, actually, of the Lake of Rot. Like the river here, you know, takes you pretty far away from it. You're kind of in this silvery chamber. There's some growth here, silvery fungus kind of stuff still around. But the big chamber that you go into gives us a beautiful view, another artificial night sky. You know, the stars, there are nebula clouds, and there's a big creature out there who is going to be our boss for this area, Estelle, natural born of the void.
This is a so we refer to sometimes when like we all text each other stuff when we're first playing through one of these. This was a really good text I got from Jeremy.
Okay.
You know, just like, holy shit, I just saw a boss that doesn't look like anything I've ever seen in like a From game. And it doesn't. It's the front half is an antlion with a human skull face. Sure.
Yeah. Big wings like an antlion.
Don't wake me up for this.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can handle bugs, but big portions of its body are fucking Mr. DNA, like are made up of dino DNA.
Yeah.
Like they look like giant science demonstration orbs to me, like in a really weird way that like just looks uncanny in that kind of dorky, but cool way that only From seems to be able to do. Consistently.
Do you remember the Nicolas Cage and Sean Connery movie, The Rock?
Yes, but it's been probably too long since I've seen it to specifically remember anything other than I fucked the prom queen.
the nerve gas that the terrorists are going to use, you know, it's a big aluminum canister, but the actual nerve gas itself, when they pull it out, is like this big kind of chain of emerald green orbs. You know, just like that's how it's contained in there for some reason. It's a really good image here. This, you know, its tail slash most of it and everything is this big tangled constellation of purple, blue, and then there are two bigger bright orange orbs. These look like Lusat's head. If you found Lusat down in Celia, right? This is that material. This has something to do with the primeval current.
Yeah, yeah. It also, out of things outside of the game, this reminded me of, immediately made me think of Yogg-Sothoth.
Yeah.
Who is a giant collection of floating orbs like this, colored in different sizes. Yeah.
And when I first saw this, I was like, that is a Kingsfield ass enemy design.
Yes,
actually,
it would actually transfer really well directly to PS1. like it's so silly looking and so much of it is just geometry.
Uh-huh.
You know, like it ends up like it's a weird way that you can kind of go backwards and end up looking alien and finding something new.
Mm-hmm.
You know, by going so.
Yeah.
I love the design of this thing.
Yeah. I love the way it moves too, because it's gigantic, right? It takes up a good portion of this. But it doesn't really seem like those big strings of orbs are like enervated or have any kind of like musculature to them. It's gigantic and it's flowing, but it's almost like it is kind of being blown by a cosmic wind that we do not see. So the combination of its size, but also its lightness is really uncanny.
Yes. Yeah. He opens with a big laser at you. You have to sidestep that and close the distance. This is going to be another distance closing fight without Torrent.
Yeah.
When you get close, he does these limb swipes because he's still an animal, you know, at the end of the day. It's not all magic. But these create this trail of like delayed explosions after them.
Yeah.
Like, so you can't just dodge. You have to dodge the after effect as well, the afterburn.
Yeah. It creates like a nebula of, you know, a cloud of stars. And then those blow up in a little delay following the direction of the swipe there.
Which you can get. There's a weapon art that does that with a curved sword, I think, called Astel's Wing.
Yeah, we got that back Noxtella, or on the way to Noxtella. Also, it's I love the Bastard Stars. One of the items you get with the Remembrance. It's a neat skill that ends up being more useful than you would think.
Yeah. He has different phases because from Soft, when you do enough damage, he does a big AoE and teleports around.
Yeah.
And he will start flying. He'll start doing these swooping grabs at you. The grab basically feels like instant death.
I've never survived it.
Yeah, like I don't know if I'm low on health or anything. It should be clear for anyone listening to this vicariously without playing Elden Ring, we're no longer in the rot zone. There's no rot here, so we're not dying because we also have Scarlet Rot during this. It's just, it does a lot of damage.
Yeah.
So like maybe you can survive it at full health, but if you've gotten tagged by anything, I oftentimes die from this. Mm-hmm. So I prioritize learning how to dodge it.
Yeah. You know, it'll do that. You gotta be on the lookout. The tip that I saw was just always you turn the camera to the left and dodge left. And you will miss it, but it is trying to find a blind angle, to come in and get you. And he will, it's funny cause he moves you up to his human mouth, with the gigantic skull there, but it's the big, mandibles that come in and kind of do a cut you in half if there was any kind of crunch. Like if there's going to be a Soldier of Fortune, you know, dismemberment kind of thing going on.
I in a general sense for me, this guy felt largely shock and awe based.
That's what I was gonna say.
I haven't had particularly a lot of trouble with him. And you know, no gamer brag, I'm bad at lots of bosses in this game, but this one has not been particularly hard for me. It looks impressive and it freaks me out, but it does not challenge me too much. There isn't that big a variety of moves. It's also the type of enemy I never find that hard. Like I am always going to find a very fast melee combatant much harder than a big kind of, you know, bug thing like this, I think.
Yeah. It telegraphs like Western Union too, you know, to a degree. It is so big and it gets easy to read. You know, it's probably happened where its regular moves have killed me, but like to my memory, anecdotally, all of my deaths to this have been because of not being able to see the big swoop for the grab. Like it has always been just letting my guard down enough to be grabbed and instantly killed. Yeah,
ambushed.
Yeah. And like he'll do another grab if you're like up close too. Like he'll just pick you up instead of doing that. That is not telegraphed very much. You know, if you're keeping him at range, you're generally safe from that. Also, he's not an HP sponge, so that's good. It's not like a ROM kind of thing, which is another closing distance boss that is annoying because you have to run towards it so many times. Its stability is low. You can stun it actually really easily, get in and do a critical.
Not too, you know, really great presentation, interesting spot in the lore. Not that fascinating of a fight, but I'll take it. I don't want everything to be a super challenge.
No.
When you defeat him, you get a message that says Legend Felled. That's where he falls in this world. And you get his remembrance, or its remembrance, or her remembrance. I'm not sure.
It's hard to say. Yes. A malformed star born in the lightless void far away. Flightless void far away. Once destroyed an eternal city and took away their sky, a falling star of ill omen. This is the one.
Asterisk. Summers near the Lake of Rot.
Okay, that nameless city that it destroyed. Oh, it's a continent or two away.
It took some time off to travel. It's been backpacking across the Lake of Rot, staying in hostels and sucking off European college students.
Why not?
Why not? There are two things you can get from this. You can get the Wave of Darkness, Ash of War, and the Bastard Stars, which is the flail that has that ability that we talked about, that kind of sending out the little stars.
Yeah.
It says, formed of the same many-colored star debris that comprised the form of the natural void.
Yeah.
Natural born of the void.
It's like,
so that many-colored star debris are those orbs.
Yeah. It's real cool to carry this thing around. I like this because, again, the character I'm primarily using is Int. Int in magic. Mm-hmm. This is nice to have as a backup for any enemy like a Crystallian, something like that, where I am not sacrificing my int scaling in order to move to something that requires a blunt, like a striking type of damage, right?
Yeah. I haven't fucked around with the weapon. I don't real reason why. I just like the weapon I had.
That,
so I haven't fucked with it. Yeah. But I believe you that it's good.
The AOE on the weapon art is also very good. It's bigger than you would think.
Yeah. Yeah. So we talked about this guy before a bit, but it's worth we alluded to it because we fought versions of this.
Right.
This is the end point of the life cycle of the Falling Star Beast.
Yeah. Remember those, the big bowls with the human skull and the mandibles? At some point, those turn into the malformed stars, the big turrets that shoot the meteors at you, you know? And then ultimately, if left to their devices, they will turn into this, right? Yes. And the implication, based on what we know, they come here, they land as a meteor sent from the void. The void is tricky to pin down. It's either far away, up in the sky, or it's another dimension.
Yeah. Unclear.
Yeah.
Unsure. I did not see the speculation you've got in the notes.
Yeah.
I've got a couple bones to pick with it. Like, I don't like it. Yeah. I'm glad that you included it. Yeah. I just don't buy it.
It's a thing, and I can see what they're pointing at. I think I got this from like TV Tropes, maybe. Forget where I saw this, but the fact that the Falling Star Beasts have a human skull, right? And they're made up of these primeval crystals. People are saying together they kind of imply that there is an earlier form. Like, okay, what would the eggs of these things be? What is the meteor? And they're saying, oh, because this looks like kind of what Lusat or Azur would, their heads turn into. The idea being that they connect to the primeval current in some way, get real attuned to Glintstone, etc. And either go Lusat or turn into a Graven Mage school, which ultimately acts as the egg that is flung around, taking the Glintstone sorcery and the Glintstone itself, across the galaxy or, the universe to try and see to these new planets, right?
Yeah, the reason I don't like that, there's a couple reasons. Mm-hmm. One is that only Lusat's head looks like these things.
Yeah.
Azur's head doesn't.
Yeah.
Like at all. So there's one. So the orb connection between Lasat's head and these orbs. I also like pulling up right now a picture of Lasat's head. Mm-hmm. The orbs on the Estelle are a little bit different. Mm. Lusat's head has more marbling to it. It looks like it has a vertical slit like an eye to it, which isn't in the Estelle version.
Yeah.
And then also, again, the fact that the Azur doesn't look like that at all. It's just an entirely different crystal. So I think these are more just crystal formations that they form into. The other thing is the fact that these Graven Mages get made on Earth. Like, this is a meteor.
Mm-hmm.
It comes from space. It's unnecessary for them to get for these mages get formed, go off into space and come back.
Yeah.
That's dumb. I hate this theory.
It is the only thing that it's connected to so little that I just wanted to bring something in for us to respond to, more than anything here. I think the scab that this is picking at is the fact that these have humanoid skulls to them, in all of their forms.
That is weird. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But that to me, it's not a scab, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, this is a very good example of lore hounding that I don't like, where it is not allowing something to be just a cool design.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it has to have an explanation. I'm not saying there isn't an explanation, but I don't want to do too much stretching in favor of it.
Yeah.
Personally. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it feels sloppier.
Yeah.
Maybe there's more out there. I don't know.
The name on this, the epithet that this Estelle has. So Estelle is not its name. That's just what this is. We're going to find another one later.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. This one's called natural born, which is an old euphemism for bastard, you know, born out of wedlock. You know, the idea being like, oh, you were born like in nature, right? It's got nothing to do with marriage or like what, you know, man, laws of man. Yeah, you just, you know, it's natural born like that.
Yeah.
I do not know why this is a bastard. What kind of wedlock is it born out of? What does that mean?
Yeah.
Or is that just, are they not using that euphemism at all? Does it not track? Just saying like, oh yeah, yeah. This is just growing up naturally. This is the end point. It has been, you know, fully formed and born without being harnessed or controlled in another way.
That's how I ended up reading it.
Yeah.
But I don't know if, again, I'm not sure.
Yep.
I don't know that there's enough there mm-hmm. for bug weddings. you know, like bug births for sure.
Yeah.
If they were born of Graven mage schools,
mm-hmm.
I guess they would technically be bastards.
Maybe.
But you know, then all animals are bastards as well.
Well, you know,
like, you know, the Kenneth Hyde has been lazing around and not marrying all the dogs in Limgrave.
The cat and the dog have been living in sin. And, man. And also, what do these have to do with Ronnie? Like, do you have any sense of that?
No, I don't. They feel connected, but not directly connected to me.
Yeah. I kind of love
these live in space. Ronnie, the moons also live in space, but we just, the currency is not, the currency is very diffuse in Elden Ring for me to, rely on specificity of detail,
mm-hmm.
you know, or conservation of detail rather.
Yeah.
Like enough things are sky and moon that I do not think they all need to be connected.
Yeah.
Because there are so many of them. It doesn't feel like a pattern because fucking half the game is obsessed with sky and moon.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Yeah. The take that I have, that I have seen. And again, it's something that people are reacting to. Just the fact that this is resting on, you know, resting along the way is that once they see Estelle and kind of its association with, you know, sorcery and glintstone and stars and stuff, I've seen people say this is the point where they start second guessing what Ronnie's actual plan is. You know, like she is presenting as this kind of more humane, you know, alternative that is not associated with the horrors of the Golden Order that it brings in. And then they say like, oh, if this is what she's going to be inviting down, that's going to be terrible. The problem is she's not inviting these down. Like very specifically, when you talk to her, we get her intention on these.
We also do not know that these are malicious.
Mm-hmm.
Like many monster, if everything that fights you in a Soulsborne or FromSoft game is malicious, then almost nothing makes sense.
This you know, feels like this is animal. This is not a god.
It's a beast. House.
Yeah.
You know, and it lands. Like the mm-hmm. other places where we fight them in the crater where they landed.
Yeah.
It's their territory. They're not hunting us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not. So like the idea of us being thrown to the mercy of the Estelle is like, doesn't feel meaningful to me. It's like how I am at the mercy of bears, you know, right now. And it's like, why just stay away from bears?
Yeah, yeah.
And if there were eggs with bears in them that were crashing into the earth randomly,
you say that like
yeah,
not.
That might, yeah, yeah. I mean, like coming soon, that might suck. But it doesn't mean the bear is malicious.
Yeah.
I'm not then at the mercy of the bears.
Mm-hmm.
Like I build a bear dome.
No,
you know, if this thing is, we come to this thing's house.
Yeah.
You know, it's, I don't like ascribing motivation to it because it is scarier and cooler to me that it is an animal.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are enough malevolent motivations from the people, humans and gods and such in this world. So it's, I know that's unsatisfying because I'm basically saying like, I don't think there's any connection there. It's not that there's no connection. It's all sky stuff, but it's, I just think that it's a property of Elden Ring that conservation of detail is a hard tool to use.
Yeah.
In it.
Yep.
Personally.
Yeah. I think a lot of that, you know, is washed away by what we know about Ronnie from what she says, you know, when we actually talk to her and about, you know, about the, from the text that we get at the end, if we choose her ending, right?
Yes. Yeah. And you don't have to believe everything she has to say, you know, there's, when you lies start becoming part of something, it also gets more complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Like all of these things, we ultimately do not know and cannot know for sure.
Yeah. Or, you know, and, she might not be lying, but she might be naive about the nature of the threat, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? That is where we are going to call it for today. If you like this show, please, you've done the things.
Mm-hmm.
Please continue to do the things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is coming out the week before Duckstream. This is coming out on the 11th. Duckstream is our big yearly streaming event where we stream for 48 hours for charity, raising money for the Trans Active Gender Project out of Lewis mm-hmm. and Clark College. This is the 9th annual. I finally checked. 9th annual.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Coming up on big 1-0, big 10.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But that's going to be running from December the 16th. Friday, December 16th, from 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific, through to December the 18th, Sunday, at 9 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Pacific.
Yeah. Current plan right now, and it's getting put together, so I'm 90% certain, but things are starting to change. I think Gwen's joining us.
Oh,
on
neat.
The West Coast.
Nice.
Yeah, she lives in Seattle. I think she's going to come down for the weekend and join us for the weekend.
Wonderful.
Yeah, that'll be really fun.
Yeah.
And until you move to the coast, this loneliness will continue to pursue you, Cole. No, that is a joke.
You say that like I'm capable of being lonely. That's fun.
Yeah, yeah. And you own a house and stuff, too. I am joking. I am not a coastal elite. But that's going to be really fun. So nice. Tune in for that. The other announcement. Mm-hmm. That we have. So when we do the roundtable, we have put out the call for that already. The interviewee, there's just one
mm-hmm.
this time, and it is Lobos Jr.
Yeah.
The speedrunner and challenge runner extraordinaire,
yeah.
Who we're really fond of.
Yeah, it's, an alumni of the show, has been a guest a few times.
Yeah, absolute sweetheart. Yeah, great man. So look forward to that. And that's going to be, we still have the end of Ronnie's Quest to do, mm-hmm. and then we will be doing that roundtable, and then it is off to Altus.
Yes. Kind of feels like a new phase. Because
totally
yes,
feels like a new phase.
It's the next chapter. Yeah.
Yeah. Until next time, what should they do?
Until next time, you know, don't, mamas, don't let that skull bull turn into a sky monster.
Mm-hmm.
We all pray that we will have far more soon. Mm-hmm.